Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and again, we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to be looking at Genesis 31. We went through Genesis 30, talked a great deal about the sons of Jacob, who were not yet Israel. They didn't learn the lessons that Jacob was learning. And a lot of the people that read the Bible and read the Old Testament, Jacob, Isaac, Abraham, they don't really understand what Abraham was doing. That should not be a surprise because Jesus talks about that. He talks about the Pharisees of the day not understanding what Moses was doing. And they studied all about Moses. They spoke Hebrew. They taught the Torah. There was Pharisees and Sadducees and Zealots, and they debated the Torah and argued the Torah. But they also had a king. And once they had a king, we can go back to 1 Samuel, and 1 Samuel tells us that they're going to have a ruler that will rule over them. And take and take and take and take and take. And of course, right away, the very first ruler they got, which was Saul, which was a good guy at the beginning, fighting for justice, fighting to protect the people, a wealthy man in his own right, putting together, you know, soldiers and organizing them to defend them against unwarranted usurpations by other nations. But once he was given this power of king, things began to change. One of the first things he did, which condemned his kingdom, his kingship, we should say, eventually would bring down the kingdom itself, was that he forced a sacrifice. And see, if you don't understand the sacrifices of Abraham and the sacrifices of Isaac and the sacrifices of Jacob and what their altars were all about, you're not going to understand what Abraham was about, and you're not going to understand what was wrong with forcing a sacrifice, because this was the foolish thing that he had done. He forced a sacrifice. Why did he force the sacrifice? To fund the military. The Philistines and the enemies of Israel, whoever they are, you can put all kinds of different labels on them, were planning to attack. But the greatest danger to Israel was within Israel, because they had lost sight of the vision of Jacob. They wanted a ruler like all the other nations. And David talks about such rulers. And he talks about the benefits of those rulers being a snare and a trap, saying that what should have been for your welfare by rulers, which we also hear about in Proverbs, if you sit and eat with a ruler, eat the benefits of rulers, the dainties of rulers, the unrighteous rewards of rulers. You know, you should put a knife to your throat because he serves you deceitful meats. But why are they deceitful? Because we don't understand the process of eating at the table of rulers. We kind of used to understand that in America, back in the 1800s, back with, you know, Davy Crockett. Go to preparingyou.com and look up Davy Crockett. I have an article up there. Davy Crockett was contending with that idea of eating at the table of rulers. You know, men who exercise authority. Christ repeats this in Matthew, Mark, and Luke that we're not to be like the governments of the Gentiles who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other to provide you with those dainties, that social welfare. You're not a Jew following Moses. You're not a Muslim following Abraham. You're not a Christian following Christ. If you're going to men who exercise authority over your neighbor to provide you with free stuff, you know, benefits, dainties, gifts, gratuities, and benefits, you're not really following Christ. And if you think you're listening to the Holy Spirit and He hasn't told you that, or now when I mention it, you don't see that, then that may not be the Holy Spirit you've been listening to. You may not really be born again. Go also to preparingyou.com and look up our article on born again. Because we will quote you right where they talk about being born again, and we will quote the next few verses that tell you how you can tell if you're really born again. You know, at the recording of this session on Genesis 31, this is the week that Charlie Kirk was assassinated. Charlie Kirk, famous guy around the world, he's famous. Famous in the land they call Israel today. Famous in Great Britain. Famous in Europe. Famous amongst many, many people. My granddaughter, she follows two people on social media. One was Charlie Kirk, and the other one was a girl by the name of Brett. I don't remember the whole name, but those of you who follow those things. She used to be with the Daily Wire, and evidently, I think she used to be with the Daily Wire, and had some sort of falling out, and has gone independent and doing rather well as a commentator on events, social events in the world today. And that's really what Charlie Kirk was, as a commentator. People say he was preaching hate. He was preaching his version of the truth. Somebody I know used to live next door to us. Not next door. Out here, you could live several miles away and we consider you a neighbor next door. But they've moved away, sold their place and moved away, got closer to town. But closer to family, I think, is what they did. And they posted something, and I made a comment. It was Charlie Kirk talking about honoring your father and mother. And in a conversation with students on campuses, that's what he did. He went around and talked to, you know, students on campus right there. He even said in an interview with people like Tucker Carlson, talking about one of the most important issues to young people is the economy. And Tucker Carlson thought, I wouldn't have thought that. And in the course of their conversation, Tucker Carlson says, well, I'm kind of insulated from the economy. Because he's rich, wealthy, doing real well economically. So he doesn't feel the pinch of inflation as much as other people who are deciding what they're going to eat or if they're going to put gas in their car. They don't own their home. They're renting, and the rent is going up, and they lose their job. They're caught between a rock and a hard place. And they will fall absolutely dependent upon the dainties of rulers, the benefits of rulers, upon the men of government who call themselves benefactors. You know, that's the left, or the Democratic Party is always talking about improving the benefits of government, increasing the benefits, and talking about cutting budgets. They get very excited, you know, very emotional, or at least try to emotionalize their constituency. But they don't realize the immorality, the consequences of being cared for by men who exercise authority. When Dan and Naphtali and Gad and Asher and Reuben and Issachar and Zebulun and the rest of them went into the bondage of Egypt, what they did was begin to eat at the table of the Pharaoh. They didn't have to. They could have stayed where they were. You know, 400 years later, the Ishmaelites were still there. They didn't go into Egypt. They survived the plague of, you know, the drought, the climate change that was taking place where they lived. They survived it. And very possible, and certainly with God's grace, Jacob and his sons could have survived it. But Jacob and his sons were at odds with one another, because Jacob was becoming Israel and his sons were not. His sons were making him stink, which we will see in Genesis 34 and find out what does that mean. That when he said his sons were making him stink. Well, God led them into bondage. Now, they could have easily headed that way anyway, but God arranged it that they go into bondage because they needed to learn a lesson. And they were not learning it like Jacob. Jacob followed the wishes of his mother and ended up getting in trouble with his red-headed brother Esau and literally kind of seemed to fear for his life. And certainly it seems to say in the text that Esau was going to have it out with Jacob because he was upset with Jacob. But the reality is his own father wanted Jacob to go and find a wife. And he went. And he had a dream. And we've talked about that dream. The same as we've talked about the vision of Abraham. What does that actually mean? And I break it to people a little bit at a time. But I'm also really tying it together with the Corban of the Pharisees. Because the Corban of the Pharisees, the problem with the Corban of the Pharisees is what Abraham's dream was all about. This division of two, you know, one sacrifice, two sacrifices, because he splits them in two, and the turtle dove sacrifice is outside, completely outside. He doesn't split that in two. That's completely on one side. But there's a division, and what they're talking about is the division of the people by the sacrifice, the nature of the sacrifice. And Abraham was not doing what Abimelech was doing. He was not doing what Nimrod was doing. He was evidently doing what Melchizedek was doing. Melchizedek being the righteous king of peace. But Abraham was not a king. But he led many, many people, many souls went with him to do whatever Abraham was doing with his altars. And Moses would do the same with his altars of clay and stone. And according to Moses and Leviticus and Deuteronomy, all the offerings, the burnt offerings of the people to serve the tents of the tabernacle by the Levites was free will offerings. Had to be free will offerings. Tithing is a free will offering. People say, we don't need tithing anymore. Tithing was done away with. No. Where do you get that? No. Tithing is your free will sacrifice to take care of your neighbor in love, through charity, through pure religion. This is what the New Testament is telling us. Through contributions. It's not 10%, but you're already, all the Christians were sitting down in groups, family groups of 10. Christ required it. He commanded his disciples to make the people organize in that fashion. There was no free bread coming from Jesus Christ until the people did that. And then when they did that, he gave them everything that he had for his own people, for his own ministers. He took their food and told them, distribute it, give it all away to all the people who were sitting down in the tents. But today Christianity doesn't sit down in the tents. They sit down in 40,000 different denominations. And they're all back in the bondage of Egypt. What was the bondage of Egypt? 20% of your labor belonged to the government. It belonged to the government. You know, if you produced 100 sacks of grain, 20 of them are going to go to the government. If you produced 100 bricks, 20 of them are going to go to the government. That's the bondage of Egypt. Also, you don't really own your land except by government suffrage. They were given land to live on. Not as an inheritance, but as by the grace of the government. They didn't own the land. And through crafts of state, the burden of that bondage under Joseph grew and grew and grew. Yet they prospered. They had more and more children. Today, the whole world is facing population collapse. The whole world is facing that population collapse. That's, we see birth rates in Europe, 1.4, 1.6. You can't sustain with that. Your people will die out. There will not be enough young people to man the factories. So they're letting in immigrants. But not like immigration. They're not like early settlers in America or your poor and huddled masses who came to America yearning to breathe free. They're coming to these countries to get free stuff at the expense of others, through the men who exercise authority, through governments. And we see it in the news. Well, we could see it in the news. But today, in America, Europe, Australia, South America, you know, like Argentina, people were blind. They couldn't see it. Oh, there's a few people get upset and they shake their fist at government. But that's not the solution. The solution is to find the truth. And finding the truth sometimes takes conversation. And Charlie Kirk was about conversation. He wasn't spreading hate. Anybody who tells you that is a liar or a fool or both. We know that all liars are fools because it's foolish to lie. But some people are fools and don't know they're lying. But no, he wasn't. But did he have all the answers? No, but he was only 31. He was looking for them. Jacob was looking for the answers. But there are some things that Jacob would not do. And we saw that in Genesis 30. Am I in God's stead? He saw the angels of God going up and down freely in his dream. And as soon as he got to the Haran and the land of Laban, to Aram, Padan Aram, as we'll look at as we go through 31, he rolls back a stone that is keeping the people from drawing water for the sheep. Now that's a metaphor. It may have also been an actual thing that took place. But if you understand storytelling and allegory, which the Bible says it's an allegory a lot of the time, it may be true stories, but it's bringing a message of truth. And you have to understand the message of truth. And like I said, Charlie Kirk was talking about honoring thy father and thy mother. And he even pointed out that the word honor there has to do with being heavy with your father and your mother. And it does have a concept of being heavy, but it actually literally means to fatten your father and your mother. Hopefully not with high fructose corn syrup. They're not actually telling you to make your parents obese, but to feed them, to care for them, to make them healthy, to provide good fats in their diet so that they don't get dementia. Because a great deal of the dementia that we're seeing today is from diet. Long chain of bad diet. But that's another story. But it means to fatten. To honor means, it's the same word in the Hebrew. Honor is the same word for fatten. And it means to care for your parents. To provide for your parents. But, you know, almost 100 years ago, someone came along and said, you don't have to provide for your parents. The state will do it. Somebody offered you the dainties of men who exercise authority. All you have to do is sign up. You'll have to pay in 1.5%. It seemed to have nothing to do with income tax. But you didn't have to pay income tax unless you made $10,000. Back in 1933, you wouldn't have to pay income tax unless you made, you know, $10,000. You could buy 3-4 homes for $10,000. Furnished homes with dishes in the cupboard. 3 bedrooms for $10,000. If you're making $10,000, you could buy 2 homes a year and live like a king. 2 homes a year and live like a king. But we'd already done something more than 100 years ago that would change that factor. We no longer were going to have just weights and measures. We were going to create a economic monetary system of promissory notes. And it was slow and gradual at first. But you can't just go back there. The big thing, though, the most important thing, is that we begin to become less moral than we were in the 1800s, in the 1840s, as a people. And our society began to change. The people began to change. The philosophers and historians of old told us that if you develop an appetite for benefits and the habit of receiving them by the rule of force, you know, men who exercise authority, then you would degenerate as a people. And of course, that's taken place. But let's see what we can find out in Genesis 31. At today's study to find out what Jacob was learning. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back. So let's start. There's quite a few verses in Genesis 31, so let's start reading through and see what we can find out. We've set the scene that Jacob went into bondage himself. Now, he didn't go into bondage like they did in Egypt. He did it for like 7 years. That was the original deal. I'll work 7 years if you give me your daughter Rachel. But Laban changes that, and we'll hear more about Laban's desire to change things. Because Laban's eye was not single. Laban tried to do the right thing occasionally. He wasn't totally godless man. But he had, from the beginning, way back in the days of Isaac and Rebecca, Laban had an eye for gold. Wealth. He was heir to Nahor. And the people, thousands of people in the Haran area, paid him not tithings, but taxes. When he sheared his flock, was he just taking wool off a sheep? Or was he shearing the people? Did he think of the people as free souls under God, or his personal possessions? Were the people his human resources? When they say his sheep, is he always talking about sheep? I mean, obviously he was a shepherd, but he was the heir to Nahor, who was the heir to all of what Terah had, who became the ruler of Haran, which was not just a city, but a vast area, and Aram. But anyway, we'll talk about that as we get to that in this chapter. Verse 1. And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all his glory. Sounds like jealousy and envy. And they don't account for Jacob's work, because Laban has prospered. But of course, there's this extra deal. You know, he worked 7 years and then found out that Laban snuck Leah in on him. You spend your week with Leah, and I will let you marry my other daughter, Rachel. But you got to promise that you'll work another 7 years. That's indenture. He was an indentured servant for 7 years so that he could marry Rachel. So altogether, he'll end up working the 14 years. Now he's into his 20 some odd years where he is now taking sheep as payment for his labor. And now, very clearly, Laban sold his daughters to Jacob. Very clearly, he also sold some sheep to Jacob. Jacob made a deal, but despite the laws of genetics and DNA, Jacob was becoming wealthier and wealthier. He made a deal with Laban, and he got the better of Laban. But he had spent 14 years with Laban. He knew how Laban made deals. Laban would not be he was a Semite. He was a descendant of Shem. That's what a Semite is. But he was a selfish son of a gun, making deals. And if he doesn't come out ahead in the deal, if he doesn't get the extra in the deal, he didn't think he did a good deal. He thinks it's a bad deal. And, you know, a lot of times people talk about Jews as making these deals, always making these deals, the pound of flesh, the merchant of Venice, all these stories over the years. And it's really unfair, because that isn't the nature of Jacob, but it was the nature of Laban. Well, while Laban was a Semite, a son of Shem, he wasn't Israel. So it really isn't fair. But again, there's a lot of people going around claiming to be Israel, and they're not really Israel, because they're not doing what Jacob did. They're not doing what Moses did. They're not doing, you know, what Abraham did. But they're still claiming to be the descendants of Abraham and Moses. in reality, they're more likely descendants of Laban, or the spirit of Laban, whose eye was not single. He was selfish. He was also, it was about him. He would have liked to be in the place of God and rule over other people. He was ruling over other people. He thought people were his possessions. Even his own daughters were his possessions. And he would have sold them twice if he could and make a profit. It's a different spirit. And yet, Jacob worked for him and with him for years and got along with him. But now things are changing. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. Of course, it was a mixed emotions before. He knew that he had the blessing of Isaac, and if Jacob worked for him, he would be a success. That some of those benefits and wealth that should belong to Jacob, he came empty-handed to Laban's house. He still knew that he would receive a blessing, and he was right, and he did receive that blessing. But now his attitude was being poisoned by his sons because of jealousy and envy. They couldn't see that Jacob brought great blessings for them, that their wealth was due to the fact that Jacob was working with Laban and for Laban. They didn't see it. They were blind to that. Because jealousy, they probably, their life was too easy. They were spoiled sons of Laban. But to some degree, the sons of Jacob were spoiled. Which, of course, is why we'll see the sons of Jacob making him stink. So, in verse 3, we see, "And the Lord, Yahweh, said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee." So, he sees Laban's son's jealousy and envy. He sees the countenance of Laban changing, and yet he does not decide to leave till the Lord tells him to return. This is the thing, is that Jacob is trying to eat of the tree of life, not his own knowledge. He's not trying to put himself in the place of God. He is allowing messengers to go up and down to God and bring messages down to earth to people, to have dreams, to have visions, to have insight, to have revelation, the divine spark. And he did something to roll back the stone so that everybody could drink of the water of the well. And Jesus was doing the same thing. He was setting the captive free and allowing the captive to prosper. But that spirit was not in the sons of Laban. It was not in Laban. But Laban would eventually make an agreement with Jacob. In verse 4 we see, "And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flocks." So he's called them out. These are his main wives. He has these concubines, which were their servants. And we've talked about that, explained the nature of that relationship. He always wanted one wife, but Laban connived with him and made it so he ended up with, it wasn't his goal to have two wives or three wives or four wives. Other people were trying to usurp the will of God for their own benefit, and he ended up with all these wives. But he would not give in to Rachel. "I am not in the stead of God." He knew that Rachel was barren for a time. because Rachel was a bit willful. She was a pretty girl. And sometimes that can be a curse. And a girl has to overcome that in her life. Verse 5, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. And ye know that with all my power I have served your father. So now he's explaining the situation, but he's making it clear that he's following God in his heart and his mind. He's not doing this because the father's countenance has changed, but I am with God. I am following God. I am doing what God is writing upon my heart. And he's explaining it to Leah and Rachel. And he says, with all my power I served your father. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God suffereth him not to hurt me. He knows that Laban can't really hurt him, even though he changes the deal. If he saith thus, the speckles shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ring strake shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ring strake. So the markings are causing Jacob to become wealthier and wealthier. But that was the deal that Laban struck. And God is making it happen. It's despite the fact that they kept the spotted animals away, the spotted rams away. The genetics is serving the wealth of Jacob. But of course, for years, Laban grew wealthier and wealthier because the blessing of Jacob was on the flocks of Laban. And Laban knew that, but he thought he could make a deal that would circumvent the will of God. Just as Pharaoh would think he could make a deal and control those who followed the ways of God, keep them in bondage. And he had several ways, and when we went through Exodus, all those studies are also available at preparingyou.com on Exodus, so you can find out what Exodus was really all about, which people are keeping secret from you, sometimes because they don't know themselves, sometimes because it would not profit them if you did know, sometimes because they have made alliances with evil. Laban hasn't really done that. He still fears God, and God will come and warn him. But he is doing evil in the world. He is doing wrong. He's doing evil to his own sons. His sons are going to make Laban stink. We're not going to follow that story. But that's what happened. That's why you find so many ruins in those areas. It's because he did not strengthen the poor souls of his sons in the way that he should. Now, he might have been doing better after this experience with Jacob. We don't know. But then his sons may not have learned their lesson. Jacob's sons, to some degree, will learn their lesson. And we will see that with their adventures with Joseph. And we've already done many of those studies, and they're also available. So, he served as Laban, the fathers of Rachel and Leah, and yet even when he changed his wages, but then he makes this deal where it looks like he's not going to get very many sheep or cattle, but he's getting all kinds, because God is changing the literal DNA to prosper Jacob. Because Jacob is trusting in God. He's waiting upon the Lord. Verse 9, thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, you know, he saw in this dream the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ring-straight, speckled, and grizzled. Yet, that's not what was actually happening, but he saw it in a dream. And of course, now it's taking place because he has an insight that others don't have. It's not 100% clear all the time for Jacob. He's on his journey back to the tree of life. We should all be on that journey back to the tree of life, back to personal, individual revelation. And even when God sends a messenger to us, somebody who knows more than we do about some things, we must consult with God, that divine spark, that point of revelation, that Holy Spirit. Is this man really a man of God? So many people follow men that are not men of God, that are actually evil men, and they don't see it. And then when a man comes along with a little bit of integrity, a little bit of character, just a little bit, we hate him. If he speaks words that we don't want to hear because he's attacking our delusion. We don't have the dreams from the Holy Spirit. We have our delusions. You will not get the wisdom of the Holy Spirit if you live in darkness. You have to approach the light. And so we see in verse 11, and the angel of God spake unto him in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here am I. You know, what do you want of me? Charlie Kirk talks about the Hebrew word that we find there. Sometimes he talks about it. He was familiar with it. I was kind of shocked that he was familiar with it. But I shouldn't be. I mean, I shouldn't say shocked. I should say surprised. Pleasantly surprised. And he said, lift up now thine eyes and see all the rams which leap on the cattle are ring-shanked and speckled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. And so, Jacob allowed those burdens to be put on him, the deal changing. Now, let's equate this with the whole world before we go on with verse 13. The whole world, United States, Canada, Argentina, all have systems where they number their citizens. You know, Social Security numbers, national insurance numbers, national ID numbers, all to do with their labor. All of them have an income tax system where a portion of their labor belongs to the government. All of them. I mean, you can see guys in the jungles of South America pull out an ID card with a number on it. You know, remote islands, they have their Sechela card. Everywhere. And all these cards are linked by treaties, international treaties, all around the world. Because people move from one country to the next. And so they link these cards. Now, there's a little bit different rules in all these different countries about, you know, like if you live in Australia, you can't necessarily get your benefits if you go to another country. If you're a British citizen and you go and live in another country, you can still receive your welfare check from the government, like your Social Security check. Social Security is a welfare check. It's not an insurance payment. Everything you paid in, it's gone. It's all gone. The only way that you can get a benefit from Social Security is force young people today to pay into it. But you can only force the young people who've signed up or been signed up, who have already started taking benefits, because, and there's a whole process. People try to equate it to the birth certificate, but it really doesn't. There were birth certificates at the time of the Caesars. The Christians got in trouble because of the rules that Marcus Aurelius brought into, but it's not the subject of today, so we won't talk about it. We're going to try to do an hour long or more program on X. Right now it's scheduled for Sunday night. Join the network, go to Preparing You, join the network, find out more about that. You can find His Holy Church on X. You can follow them, and they will announce when we have these programs. And these programs will be a little bit different than this one, because we can take callers, and it will operate differently. And we've dipped our toe in the water of X a little bit, but we're going to try to do that on a regular basis. And so if you want to find out more, join that. And we'll try to turn them into podcasts if we do a good job. And it warrants our time and energy. But the whole world has gone back into the bondage of Egypt. It's not a 7-year bondage like it was with Jacob. They're in the bondage of Egypt because they sat down with rulers and ate with great appetite. They developed an appetite for benefits of rulers, which Jesus told you not to do. Polybius warned you not to do. David told you that it was a snare and a trap. Paul repeats the warnings of David that it's a snare and a trap. Proverbs tells you it's deceitful meats. And the fact is, if you're desiring benefits from men who only can give you what they take away from others, that's definitely covetousness. And Peter tells you that will make you merchandise, human resources. And it will curse your children with debt. You know, they'll become a surety for debt. And that's why they were in the bondage of Egypt. And that's why you're in the bondage of Egypt. If you want to reverse that process, you have to start to journey back to the tree of life. But there's a cherub in the tree of life with a sword, like a lightsaber that shines in all directions. That's what it says. A cherubim, whatever that is. And as you approach the tree of life, you approach the light that's given off from the tree of life. And you see you're naked. You're not in the place of God. Should not be trying to rule over your neighbor. Should not be trying to turn people into possessions. The assassin of Charlie Kirk was certainly trying to rule over Charlie Kirk. He couldn't shut him up, so he shot him in the throat. I mean, that's even you go back to Robespierre, not necessarily to compare him to Charlie Kirk, but they couldn't stop him because his rhetoric was so, you couldn't compete with Robespierre. He was an amazing speaker. And he could get the people behind him. Not that he was always right. But they couldn't stop him. So when they went to shoot him, they shot him in the mouth. They had to shut him up. Now, I don't think that the assassin understood that. But evil understands that. And so we want to make sure that we're always doing like Jacob did, waiting upon the Lord to guide us. Should we be here? Should we be there? And we're not going to hear the Lord if we're not single-minded. Laban couldn't hear the Lord. His sons couldn't hear the Lord. Many people can't hear the Lord. Some people think they're listening to the Lord, but they're not. And of course, that's why we wrote the article on born again. So you can find out what to look for to find out if you really are born again. Because it's not an emotional experience. It's a spiritual experience. And it's a process. If we learn one thing, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the sons of Jacob, who become Israel. It was a process. Sometimes over many years, but always over time. God gives us time. It's a gift. So we have to follow that wisdom and realize that we're in that process and we have to approach the light and get out of the darkness. Verse 13, I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out of this land and return to the land of the kindred. That's what we'll talk about, returning to the ways of righteousness when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom after a brief break. Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. So they're going to begin this journey back to the land of his kindred, back to the ways of Abraham. He's going to get out of this bondage relationship with Laban. And he's leaving with lots of stuff. Kind of like the bondage of Egypt. They all wanted to go. Well, we want to go. They could have just left right then. If the Pharaoh said, yeah, go. I'm not going to get in your way. And of course, he had no right to get in their way because the rightful Pharaoh was Moses. He said, let my people go. These are my people. These are my possessions. I have a right to the ownership of these people. And I want to take them out into the desert and show them the ways of Abraham, the ways of righteousness, the ways of the king that we know as Melchizedek, king of peace, which is the ways of Christ. And if you knew that's what Moses was doing, you would know that's what Christ was doing. But if you're sitting in darkness, you won't know. You won't understand these things. And you won't understand them because you listened to this broadcast. You'll understand them because the light of God begins to shine in your heart. But you're going to have to admit to God that you've been wrong, that you've been deceived, that you have been sitting in darkness. You haven't been following the ways of righteousness. Because you're going to see that as you approach the light. That it's the only thing, it's the only way, the way of Christ, to get out of that darkness, is you have to go this other way. Now, is that what Rachel and Leah are going to do? And we see in verse 14, and Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? The father was giving everything to the sons. This is one of the things of culture that is the culture of Laban that is not the culture of Jacob, the culture of Abraham, the culture of Moses. It's a culture, we see it coming out of places like Asia and Africa, Middle East, where the daughters don't inherit. The daughters are literally property. Women are property in Saudi Arabia. They didn't outlaw general slavery until 1961. And the truth is, there's still slavery in Saudi Arabia. There's certainly lots of slavery now in Libya, now that Gaddafi's gone. But the truth is, the bondage of Egypt, which everybody says there were slaves in Egypt, and you were slaves in Egypt, but there were terms, 20% of your labor. That was still the law under Mubarak, you know. Just, when I was growing up and when I was first married, Mubarak's income tax was 20% no matter what you made. Now they had other taxes through other crafts of state. They taxed lots of people, but it was still, you know, it says forever in Egypt, that's the way it would be. back in Exodus. But, or with Joseph. But the reality is the bondage of Egypt is legal in America, in the United States. And it says so in the Constitution. There's no involuntary servitude legal in the United States. But voluntary servitude through contract, that's absolutely legal. And of course, such contracts exist. But a lot of people says, well, I didn't agree to that. Well, you didn't read the contract. You didn't read the laws that will govern the contract. You didn't find out why and how that contract would be enforced. Was it going to be enforced like the contract that we're going to see come up in verse 47 here? Or was it a contract like the one that Joseph set up in Egypt? Or is it worse? Well, maybe we'll see that before we're done here. But we better clip along because we got 50 verses in this chapter. So Rachel and Leah see that is there any inheritance, any portion left in their father's house? Are we counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us and hath quite devoured also our money. He's squandering the money somehow. Devoured. I mean, they actually have a word there that means devoured. Burned up. Eaten up. And of course, he's probably getting help from, wasted, destroyed. He's probably getting help from the sons. But the sons are more important than the daughters. And this is the spirit that creeps into societies where the people are possessions. If you want to oppress a nation, first you oppress the women. And you don't realize that the women are vessels of the Holy Spirit, or can be vessels of the Holy Spirit. They're certainly the vessels from which the next generation comes. They are to be cherished, not oppressed. But we see that spirit of oppression leaking into societies. It's certainly leaking into Europe. It's brought into Europe with a lot of the immigrants. Have that cult in their cultures. They as if they didn't have enough of the Leban types in Europe already. See, the Muslims are not looking for Melchizedek, righteous king of peace. They're looking for a caliphate. I mean, generally speaking, that's what they publish. That's what they teach. They want a ruler who can exercise authority. They want Nimrod sitting on the throne. Each of them wants to be ruler over their neighbor. They want to be in place of God. That's what the teachings of Muhammad have become today. You look at Shiites, you look at Sunni, it's in there. It's in many of them. Now, we don't want to lump all Muslims together. There are individuals in the Muslim faith or in the Muslim mystique that may have the divine spark growing in them. So we don't want to count anybody out as a Muslim, a Jew, a Christian, a Catholic, or any of these names that we put on from the outside, because we know that the kingdom of heaven is within you. And it may be within anybody. Just like those sheep and the cattle should not have been coming up with all these multiple colors. But they were. They were coming up. Somehow or other, he was instilling in them that they were going to belong to Jacob. I don't know who is going to actually be in this division of the smoking furnace and the burning lamp. The burning lamp being Christ, that is going to bring this division. But I know what the criteria of that division is. That God is God and you are not. And that you have to sacrifice your life for love of others. This is the two commandments, paraphrased in a different way. And if you're looking to men who exercise authority to provide you with your daily bread, you're not eating the Eucharist of Christ, no matter what some robed monk, priest, or pastor puts on your tongue. That's not the Eucharist. The Eucharist of Christ is thankful for the opportunity of giving your life for another. Happy to lay down your life for another. Willing to follow the ways of God and see the light and the truth and the way. So in verse 16, for all the riches which God hath taken from our Father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. So their reasoning is not, we want to do this because God is writing it upon our hearts, but that Laban didn't cherish us. You do. So they're recognizing somehow in their spirit, their logic is not 100% correct. It's not false, but it's not 100% correct. It's not the logos of Christ. It's the rationale of women. Of these women. It's the rationale of these women that is saying, he stole from us, but you have blessed us. You must be of God. So whatever God tells you, we're going to follow that. It's a little bit like Ruth. Ruth was more so, I think, that way as things progressed with Ruth. But she wanted to follow Naomi because she saw the truth in the ways of Naomi. She had heard enough about it from her own husband before he died, that she wanted to follow that way. And to their credit, they are going to follow their husband. This is going to be a challenge, following their husband. So verse 17, then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting, which he had gotten in Padanaram, for to go to Isaac, his father, in the land of Canaan, where Isaac is a stranger. He's dwelling as a stranger in the land. He is not a citizen of the city-states of Canaan. Of course, Isaac's not there anymore, but Esau is. But he's going back to the way of his father Isaac and the way of Abraham, because God told him to. And Leah and Rachel are going because they see that their husband knows something. They're submitting to their husband's will. It has some logical reasons to do so, but ultimately they know that he cherishes them. And he's going to see that as he arranges things in the chapters to come. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. The images. The graven images of silver that were her father's. The badges of Terah. That kind of thing. We've talked about that, the idolatry. He is a man of authority, an heir to Nahor, and therefore an heir to Terah. And this is symbolized in the images, the statues of silver that he had. And they're gone. And he discovers that when he went to shear his sheep. Why did he discover it when he went to shear his sheep? Well, because all the people that follow Laban are also his sheep. I mean, he has real sheep with wool on them. But all the people that follow Laban and are under the authority of Laban are the merchandise of Laban. They are his sheep. And when he needs more money, he shears them. Not just get the wool off, but he's not waiting for their tithes. He has rolled a stone over them and put a burden upon them. Maybe not too great. They're not rebelling yet. But eventually there will be rebellion. Probably with his sons. But this is the difference between the ways of Laban and the ways of Jacob. Jacob rolls back the stone, sets the people free to drink. But Laban says, no, I'm coming to shear my sheep. And his badges, his images that show his authority are gone. And Rachel has taken them. He doesn't know who's taken them. He just knows that they're gone. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban. And that particular word there, stole away and fled. We're going to see that word fled. It means he did it without consulting Laban. He didn't have to. Because the last year you're supposed to let the slave go out free. That's not just new to Moses. That was around for many, 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 many years. Organizing people in the tens, hundreds, and thousands was around for many, 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 many years. Even Nimrod did that. But he did it from the top down. Jesus did it from the bottom up. The people had to organize themselves. So we quoted that in Micah 5. You know, it prophesies the coming of Jesus out of Bethlehem. It precedes that statement that we find in verse 2 of Micah 5. Out of Bethlehem comes the ruler of Israel. It's the ruler of Israel. Laban wanted to be the ruler of Jacob. But God was the ruler of Israel. But Jesus is supposed to come out of Bethlehem. But if we read verse 1 in Micah, now gather thyselves in troops. Sit down in tents. They're telling us all the way back in Micah to do that. But you have to do it yourself. You have to gather thyself in troops. And the word troops there is tov tov, faith, faith. Gimel, cause and effect. If you gather in faith, faith, in spirit and truth, tell it, comes about. So what's tell it? It's a double tell it in spirit and truth. And of course you can go look those things up because we have them there at preparing you so you can look them up so you can find out what delet is. But it ends in the yod. The word ends in the yod, which is the divine spark. You want the divine spark to increase in you so that you can see in the way that Abraham saw, the way that Isaac saw, the way that Jacob saw. You have to move in spirit and truth by faith. Single-minded. Single-eyed. Laban didn't. He tried to have faith in there's a God of Nahor. But I still want to manipulate things. I still want to hold people as possessions. I still want to benefit from these subjects of mine. And everybody does. They still want their benefits from men who exercise authority. That exercising authority is just taken away from your neighbor. And now that your nation is absolutely bankrupt, you're literally taking a bite out of one another. And therefore you have been devoured. But your preachers aren't preaching this because they're not really listening to the Holy Spirit. But there's got to be some out there that are listening. I don't see a lot of them. I see some of them that are getting bits and pieces of it. Even Charlie Kirk was getting bits and pieces, but he was still thinking that there was a political solution. In the last several months before he was assassinated, he seemed to be waking up to some things. I don't follow him all the time, but I try to stay abreast of things that are going on in the world so that I can keep our messages here at Keys of the Kingdom relevant. You all know what the keys of the kingdom are, right? It tells you several times in the Bible. The keys of the kingdom is what you bind on earth is bound in heaven. And what you loose on earth is loose in heaven. Jacob had his wives, he could just say, get on those camels and ride. But he explains it to them. He wants them to make a choice. He wants them to come because they accept him as their husband. They accept him as a messenger of God. And that's what you see there. What God tells you, do. They didn't try to talk him out of it. You know, they followed him because they believed that he was really following God. Is that the same as following Laban? Laban's people were respecters of persons. The person meaning an office. The office was signified or recognized as having the statues, the badges of silver. But now they're gone. They're missing. And he wonders, who took them? So he wants to find out who took those. And, you know, and he finds out, of course, when he goes to shear his sheep. So now, and he finds out that Jacob has fled. So he fled with all that he had. And he rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward the Mount of Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. So he's got a 3-day head start. But he's taking his family, children, men, women, lots of people are going with him. There's lots of servants that are going with him that are his because his daughters had servants. Laban's daughters had servants. They had possessions. And what went with them when they were sold to Jacob as a brides that they were. And God came to Laban. It says, came to Laban the Syrian in a dream. The fact that they said Laban the Syrian, there's a message in that. And understanding that word Syrian is probably important. I have some links there in the side panel so you can kind of track that down, but we're going to have to clip along here. So it came to him in a dream. So he's getting dreams from God. The Pharaoh got dreams from God. Lots of people can get dreams from God, but they don't always know what they mean. And this one, he knew a little bit. By night, when he was sleeping, a dream came and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And when they say speak, make sure your conversation with Jacob is neither good nor bad. You don't have a right to judge Jacob. Then Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent. It says he had pitched his tent in the mount. And Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what hast thou done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters, captives taken with the sword, as captives taken with the sword? Which he thinks that's okay to go out there and enslave people, like we saw with Sodom when the five kings came and captured people with a sword and took them away. He thinks that's okay. Abraham doesn't think that's okay. Different cultures. Some people think you can conquer a country and set up their government for them. They think that's okay. That's not okay with Abraham. That's not okay with Moses. You're not supposed to be doing that. There are some countries that think they can go and conquer a whole people and turn them into servants, subjects in their own country. There's a constant battle of these two ideas. One is on one side of the smoking furnace and burning lamp, and the other is on the other side. So, verse 27, wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and didst not tell me, that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with song, with tabret and with harp, and hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters, that hast now done foolishly in so doing. He's kind of not following the directions he got in the dream. But he's still just talking, okay? That's different than the whole idea of a conversation, which also may turn into action. It is the power of my hand to do you hurt. But then he remembers, but the God of your father, spake unto me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. Now he didn't say the God of his father, and later on we will see him make reference to the God of his father. Are these the same God? Well, you can usually tell by the culture and customs. What is the spirit of that God telling this group? Because the spirit of some gods tell you that it's okay to oppress women and to make slaves of men and all that stuff. But the God of Abraham is not saying that's okay. So verse 30. And now, though thou wouldst needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods, the silver statues, images. Okay, we'll have to return to Keys of the Kingdom to find out what all this means. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back. So, verse 31, let's start right away. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure, thou wouldst take by force thy daughters from me. Now, he uses this word afraid. Was he afraid of Laban? I mean, the word for afraid in the Hebrew is, if I remember, it's Yad Resh Elef. Yad Resh Elef. But in the text, we see Yad Resh Elef Tav. Actually, Tav Yad. It begins with Yad, ends with Yad. The divine spark. It begins with and ends with the divine spark, and it has a Tav just before that ending. And you find the word about 3-4 places in the whole Bible. You won't see it again till Samuel, but you'll see the word afraid lots of times. But that particular spelling doesn't show up until Samuel. And Samuel is kind of an odd place because, well, we won't go into it. We've got a lot to cover, but it also appears in Psalms and Habakkuk. But it's usually fear of God. And by faith, he knew. He respected the idea that he believed that Laban would take his wife and children by force from Jacob because his countenance had changed. He loved stuff more than, and wealth and riches more than he loved Jacob. And he would have done Jacob in. And Jacob respected that idea because of his faith. He didn't fear Laban as an individual. And he speaks boldly about it to Laban. With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, now here he says, let him not live. Before our brethren discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. He didn't know that. He just sentenced Rachel to death if she's found with those statues. Because he says, whoever's got them, let them not live. He just gave Laban permission to kill that person who has stolen them. But he says, go through all my stuff. You find anything that belongs to you before all these witnesses, you know, lay it out here. So, again, this is very important in the ideas of Jacob, is that you need to have all the facts out and everything. And, you know, of course, Rachel has a premature death eventually. But I'm not saying this is what caused it. Rachel's own willfulness is what caused her a lot of her problems, which is a lesson for everybody. But she did follow her husband. She did listen to her husband. She did bear very important children in the course of Jacob's life, Joseph, Benjamin. So things are playing out. And there's a lot of significance to them, but we can't cover it all in 2 hours. So verse 33, the Laban went into Jacob's tent and into Leah's tent and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then went he out to Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. And she said to her father, let it not displease my father that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but found not the images, because she was sitting on them. So there's a significance to this. We're not going to go into all of it, but the way God works, I mean, this is still playing out to this very day. But we don't know who all the players are, because we often do not sit in light, but in darkness. But she's holding the badges of Nahor. And so whatever, she's holding them literally. You could say that she stole them, but she is heir. And if all her brothers and their sons die out and lose their heirship, she inherits. So therefore Joseph inherits, therefore Israel inherits. But who is Israel today? It has to be those who are following the ways of Jacob. Verse 36, and Jacob was wroth and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? I mean, he did it without a warrant, right? But no, he had permission. Jacob gave him permission, didn't need a warrant. Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. He's bringing out the truth. He's laying it all out right before the people. Something Charlie Kirk did all the time. You know, he debated him. He set his position. And he was respectful of almost everybody who came up, although I can't say the same. People cheered when he died. How dark is their soul? He would not have cheered when any of them died. That is just foreign to him, not his custom. It might be the custom of those who oppose God. Those who oppose God may find themselves on the wrong side of the smoking furnace and burning lamp. The 20 years have I been with thee, he goes on. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the ram of thy flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beasts I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. He replaced all that he lost for Laban over and over again. You know, lost under his watch. Thus, I was in the days, the drought consumed me. and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. And thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle. And thou hast changed my wages 10 times. Mentions it twice. So, not fair, fraudster, deal maker, but still he honored him. Except the God of my father and the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac, which means his reverence for Isaac, had been with me, surely thou had sent me away now empty. God hath seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight. So God, in his dream, came to Laban and warned him. You know, I always wonder, did the Pharaoh have warning about not pursuing the Israelites into the Red Sea? Well, I can't tell you. But he chose with him and explains with him that God has protected him, and that God is still on his side. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters. These children are my children. These cattle are my cattle. And all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children which they have borne? Now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. We won't go into all the Hebrew, but he's still thinking these daughters are his. And they were, until he sold them. These children would be his, but he sold his daughters. He sold everything to get what he thought would be better, and now he's losing. But he knows he's trapped, because he believes that there is a God of my fathers, a God of Abraham, a God of Isaac. And he wants to make a deal, wants to make another covenant. And now he's going to see this covenant one way, and Jacob's going to see it another, but as far as I know, he kept the covenant. I may find out different someday, but so far I can't find it. And Jacob took a stone, and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. Laban called it Yagar Shadutha, but Jacob called it Galid. So, why the two different names? And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galid. And Mizpah, for he said, O the Lord, watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. When we are absent one from another. He says, Lord, watch between us. So who's the enforcer of this covenant? They're going to trust one another. They're making an agreement. They're making a record of it by piling up these stones. But who's the enforcer of this agreement of trust? The Lord. They're not getting Nimrod in on the deal. It's a trust. They're establishing a record of a trust. But the Lord is the enforcer of it. And Laban is seeing the Lord can change genetics of the sheep and the cattle. This Lord is powerful. He can make you rich or poor. And the Lord would be his servant and protector. And he realizes that. And so now he's leaving this contract to the Lord. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives besides my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. It's God who's going to protect this agreement. And Laban is not going to sit in the place of God. He's not going to ask somebody else to sit in the place of God, some ruler, some president, some prime minister. He's going to let God be in the place of God. This is what everybody should be doing if they want to be free. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar, which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be the witness, and the pillar be the witness, and I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. And he says in verse 53, the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. And of course we're always told to fear not, but that word fear there, we would have to study that. I have a link there to show you what word that is, but I have put more in the side panel. But we have two more verses, we want to cover them, and then we'll get back to those names. Then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up, kissed his sons, and that be his grandsons and his daughters, and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place. And now there's this barrier between them at this mountain, and he's not going to cross over. And of course, neither should Jacob or the sons of Jacob, which is Israel, the Israel, whatever that is. We haven't really found out who Israel is because we haven't understood the culture of Jacob, the culture of Abraham, the culture of Moses, the ways of these prophets. So anyway, Laban has this big long name for this pillar that is a record. And we actually see in this big long word, these letters, well, there's three letters there in the middle of it. Shin, He, Delet. And that means a record. But there's a Yad Gimel, and there's a Vav Tav Elif. What's the Yad Gimel? The Yad Gimel, Yad, divine spark, that comes from the divine. Gimel, cause and effect. The cause and effect of God is the judge of this agreement, this record. Shin Hei Delet. It's not Nimrod. It's not FDR. It's not Trump. It's not the Queen of England. It's not, I don't know, I was trying to think of all the different, it's not Mao Zedong, but it's God. And at the end of the word is Vav, which is either connecting or dividing. In this case, I believe it's more connecting, but if that determines if you remain faithful to the Yad Gimel, the cause and effect judged by God. The Tav Elif, Elif is the relationship of God and man. Tav is through faith. So this is how he sees this agreement. He recognizes that God is the judge of it. But then we have this Gelet, which is another whole different word, entirely different word, that begins with the Gimel, which is cause and effect, and Lamad has to do with the operation of the hand, what you do, and tzedek, which is righteousness. So this is how Jacob sees it, is righteousness. D sell it, we mentioned it earlier, might as well tell you. I told you it was over in the side panel, the definition of it. If you look at that up, right, you click on it. Delet means selflessness. Jacob was selfless. He endured fraud, changing my wages 10 times, cold, hot, suffered all the iniquities that Laban could think he could get away with. But he still fulfilled the agreements over and over again. And he tried to be a good husband to Rachel, and Rachel tried to manipulate him. She was a little willful. She didn't have the bright eyes of Leah. She had the looks, but still, out of her came Joseph. She had lessons to learn, and she had difficulties to learn them in. But the Delet is selflessness, which is about charity, free will offerings, back and forth. And it opens a door when you do that. When you're selfish, then you're going to eat the dainties of rulers who take away from your neighbor. You're not going to love your neighbor. You're going to love what you can get out of your neighbor. You're not going to take it away. That would be stealing. But you could covet it through men who exercise authority. But you'll end up back in the bondage of Egypt. And your eyes will be darkened. And you will not understand what it is to enter into the kingdom. Because you will bind yourself on earth, because the dainties of rulers is a snare and a trap. Like David says, there is a welfare provided by rulers that is a snare and a trap. Paul tells you that. He even tells you that idolatry is covetousness, and covetousness is idolatry. All those people who could be sheared by Laban, just like all the people of the world can be sheared by their rulers, taxed by their rulers, are idolaters. They're all under these rulers because of covetous practices. Rachel and Leah followed Jacob back to his homeland and became the mothers of Israel in history. So, do we really understand now what the message of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is? Are we following their way? If we're not, we're not following the way of Moses either. And we're probably following the Corban of the Pharisees. Today, modern Christians are more like the Pharisees because they have a system of Corban where they go to men who exercise authority and ask them to take away from their neighbors, the other people who have also signed up for systems of social welfare that are a snare and a trap. And there's all kinds of people trying to offer you ways out of that snare and the trap. It'll probably be a topic that we cover on X to try to dissuade you of your delusions and bring you into the light, and so that you do not follow the ways of darkness. Because today, just like in the days of Jesus Christ, the people do sit in darkness. Why do they sit in this darkness? Because they are not following the ways of truth. Genesis 3:8. We can go all the way back to there, that when they heard the voice of the Lord God in the garden, in the cool of the day, Adam and his wife Eve hid themselves from the presence of the Lord. God didn't hide himself from you. You're hiding yourself from God. You know, and later it talks about the cherub in the tree of life with the sword that shines in every direction, the tool that shines in every direction. And they fled. They fled that light. We're still fleeing that light. If you want to be born again, you have to go back. You know, we see in Psalm 69:22, I've referred to it several times here, the table becomes a snare before them, and that which should have been for their welfare, let it become a trap. Let their eyes be darkened. When you're in the trap, your eyes are darkened. You don't want to admit that you're back in the bondage of Egypt. So your eyes are darkened and you can't see. And only Christ can remove the scales from your eyes. But that requires not envy and jealousy, but humility and forgiveness. Because when your eyes are darkened, they see not. And they're constantly living in fear. They think they cannot live without the dainties of rulers. They cannot survive without a system of social welfare based on force and fear and fealty. They do not really believe in the gospel of love and charity and hope and free will offerings of Moses. They don't really believe in that. That's why Israel over there is almost a socialist nation with a Federal Reserve system and, you know, not just weights and measures and forced drafting the people into their military. All things that were forbidden in the Old Testament. But they all do them. Which is why there are so many Jews that disagree with what Israel over there is doing. But do they agree with Moses? Do they agree with Christ? Well, Jews think they don't have to. If Jews really agree with Moses, they would all become Christians. Not like the Christians, because all the Christians today have become, like I say, more like the Pharisees. They have their system of Corban. You know, go preparingyou.com, look up the word Corban. We explain and show you in detail how the system of social welfare that has snared the whole world is a system of Corban that makes the Word of God to none effect. So we could go on. There's a link there to all the things, but we need to have communion hath light with darkness. What communion would we have with light and darkness? But anyway, you'll have to join us maybe on X Sunday night. And we'll talk more. Until then, peace on your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.